Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the Bike James Podcast. Today I wanted to share a couple of studies with you that I came across recently on social media. That's one of the cool things about social media, is getting to see studies that other people that I follow share that I may not otherwise come across, and then getting to learn some stuff and how to apply it to mountain biking and then share those lessons with you. So I came across a couple of really interesting ones lately that I wanted to talk about and share some insights that'll help you get better at mountain biking, and also just you know, how to make your mountain bike training more effective as well. So the first study took a look at recovery posture and your ability to recover from high intensity interval training. And high intensity interval training is, you know, basically where you're, you know, doing real high intensity intervals. You know, the name is self-explanatory. If you've done cardio training for any amount of time, you have probably done high intensity intervals at some point. And as you know, they suck. And one of the reasons that they're great for mountain biking is that, you know, mountain biking a lot of times is high intensity interval training. You've got climbs, and then you've got a little some recovery, and then more climbs, and then recovery, and then downhills, which can have some high intensity interval training like aspects to it as well. And so it's a lot of high intensity efforts followed by lower intensity periods to recover. And so that's one of the things that makes mountain biking unique compared to, say, like road cycling, where a lot of times it's easier to manage and keep your effort levels a little more controlled and a little more sustained. Whereas on the trail just is sometimes demanding effort levels of you, and you have no choice but to respond or get off and start pushing. And so again, the, you know, mountain biking is way more like interval training than you know, some of the other cycling sports out there. So that's why it's so popular for mountain bikers. You know why I use it in the programs that that I have as well. But the study was looking at what is the best recovery posture for doing interval training. And, you know, again, another thing is, if you've ever, especially in sports, done any sort of you know, running or whatever in sports, you've probably had some coach tell you not to lean over, that you, when you're done running, that you want to stand up straight, you know, maybe even have your hands on top of your head, because that's going to help open up your lungs and make it easier to get air into your lungs and breathe and recover. And that the instinct to lean over and put your hands on your knees and lean over and is bad, and that it's actually going to make it harder to recover because you're leaning over and reducing lung capacity. And it makes a lot of sense, and it's actually become, you know, pretty much one of the standard ways to tell people to recover. I've told people this myself, and I've done it myself. And so it was interesting when I came across this study, because it said that actually the opposite is true. When they looked at your heart rate recovery and also the amount of CO2 that your the volume of CO2 that you're exhaling and getting rid of, because that's one of the main things that you're trying to do. You've got this CO2 built up in your blood. Your body's trying to get rid of it to you know, get the CO2 levels stabilized. And so the more of it you're able to exhale during the recovery period, the harder you're going to be able to work in the subsequent interval, and the less buildup you're going to get from interval to interval. And so both of these things are really important to your ability to recover from intervals and hard efforts. And again, you know, a lot like we do on our bikes. And so the study found that leaning over and putting your hands on your knees was more effective than standing up straight with your hands on top of your head. And so again, kind of a surprising find there, given what a lot of us have you know, heard and probably been doing ourselves when it comes to interval training. And so a couple ways that this affects us as mountain bikers, you know, the first is pretty obvious as far as when you're doing interval training in the gym, is to not stand up straight and put your hands on top of your head. So even if you're on the bike, you're doing intervals on your bike. Again, I've done this myself, and I've seen it done a lot of times. People get done with a hard effort, and then they sit up straight, and they put their hands on top of their head, and they may keep pedaling or whatever, but they're sitting there trying to recover from this sitting up, hands on top of their head position, instead of putting weight on their hands and leaning over and basically, relaxing in that leaned over position and recovering from that position. And so again, this study would suggest that we would be better by continuing to lean over. Now again, granted, this study looked at running versus cycling. And so, you can definitely make some arguments that perhaps there's a difference. So it would be interesting to see a study done that looks specifically at cycling with this. But I think that the takeaway is still there, that it's transferable between the two as far as, leaning over and instead of putting your hands on your knees, in this case, staying leaned over and putting some weight on your hands and staying leaned over to recover. And on a side note, I've actually found this myself. I started wearing a heart rate monitor to go along with my Morpheus recovery app and HRV monitoring tool that I've been using. And I've been using it on my mountain bike rides and also when I do jiu-jitsu. And jiu-jitsu's a really... man, you talk about high intensity intervals. You're basically, 5 minutes of wrestling with a minute recovery. And, you'll do that for like an hour. And so looking at my heart rate during jiu-jitsu was really kind of disheartening because my heart rate would get really high. And again, you're wrestling another person. There's nothing, they've actually studied this, like wrestling has the highest work to rest ratio. 10 to 1 of any sport out there. It's insane how intense it is. And so your heart rate gets through the roof and it stays there for a while and then you've got a minute to recover. And I was noticing that my heart rate was not recovering very well in that minute between rounds. And I'd actually come across somebody posting something about this on Instagram before I found this study, I came across somebody posting the study. It's talking about this same thing and how you'd be surprised how leaning over will actually help facilitate recovery better than staying standing up. And so the next time I went into train jiu-jitsu and we were doing rounds, I did that. And so instead of, immediately what I would do is after a round, I would stand up. I would, try and put my hands on top of my head and walk around. And again, thinking that that's what's helping me recover faster. And so this time when the round was over, I would just sit there and I would stay leaned over and I would have my hands on the mat and I would just be, breathing again, still trying to use good breathing techniques. I think that controlling your breathing, in through the nose, out through the mouth is still helpful. But, the posture that I was using was much different and it's night and day. I mean, I have the data to look at and see for myself. And I showed it to a bunch of people because of how interesting it was. And you could see a dramatic difference in how quickly my heart rate was recovering when I was staying in the leaned over posture versus standing up. And so again, like I can personally confirm this myself from, the experience that I've had with it. And so again, just when I'm out on the trail riding, because we stay leaned over a lot, it's something that we don't necessarily take our hands off the handlebars and sit and put our hands on top of our heads a lot on the trail. So it's not something, on the trail, it probably happens a little bit more, but during training, this is something that you can definitely, apply. And also just when you're on the trail after a hard effort, remember, like if you this whole idea, I've talked about this before, like not putting weight on your hands it's nonsense. There's a time and a place for everything. And you definitely don't want to be putting a lot of weight on your hands in a lot of situations on the bike, but there's a time when it's okay. I mean, if you get done with a tough climb and you get to the top and there's, it flattens out a little bit and there's not a lot of technical stuff that you have to worry about running into or whatever, it is okay to put some weight on your hands and use that recovery breathing posture, that leaned over recovery breathing posture to help you recover. And so again, I think that this is one of the things, like mountain bikers out there hear this, you know, light hands, heavy feet, and they get scared to put any weight on their hands at all. I've talked about this, how it ruins standing, pedaling, how, you know, a bunch of different situations where people's fear of putting weight on their hands actually holds them back. And so it's really a matter of understanding when and where to be able to place weight, and the difference between weight and pressure, because again, there's a difference between these two things. So it becomes a nuanced conversation. But like a lot of things, people don't want nuance. They want a black and white, you know, good, bad answer. And so you come out with this weight on your hands is bad, weight on your hands, you know, weight on your feet is good. And so, again, in general, that may be the case, but there's definitely times in where that's not the case. And so, yeah. And this is one of those times, just kind of think about as you're using this posture to help with your recovery from intervals during training, and also just kind of, hard efforts on your bike when you're on the trail. So that's the first study. The second study that I looked at was taking a look at the effects of a low carbohydrate diet on the performance, the exercise performance of exercise trained men and women. And again, this is important because a lot of times you'll have studies that'll be done on untrained individuals. You know, you have the college student who's never really worked out before or has a real minimal training background, and they, you know, sign up for some study and they see some results. And so it's one of those things you always have to keep in mind when looking at studies, is who was the study done on? And if it wasn't done on people who usually exercise, and you're trying to draw conclusions about people who usually exercise, maybe, you know, those conclusions still apply, but you just have to remember there's a difference. And so that's what made this study a little bit more significant, was that it looked at the effects of this on people who were trained. So again, if you're a mountain biker, I mean, unless you just started yesterday, you train. And I mean, just riding your mountain bike is training. And so, you know, again, this has a little bit more application for us than it does something that was just done on, you know, random people who don't work out or train or mountain bike or do anything like that. So the study was looking at, again, the exercise performance, people on a low carbohydrate versus a you know, higher carbohydrate diet. And they were specifically looking at a ketogenic diet. And again, this is coming up because the ketogenic diet, intermittent fasting, which aren't necessarily the same thing, but they kind of get lumped in to this, to, you know, the same category. You know, paleo, again, not the same thing, but kind of get lumped into the same category. You know, anything that where you're really monitoring and trying to minimize your carbohydrate intake. A lot of these diets, that's what they have in common, is you're trying to really limit your carbohydrate intake, specifically sugars and, you know, refined carbohydrates and stuff like that, which in general you definitely want to do. But above and beyond that, you have, you know, diets that have you really limiting the amount of carbohydrates you're taking in. So for example, in this study, they were looking at a ketogenic diet where they were getting basically around 10% of their energy intake through carbohydrates. It was like 9% plus or minus one, so somewhere in that 10% range. And the other group was getting around 60% of their energy intake from carbohydrates. And so they were testing to make sure that, you know, people were in you know, a ketogenic state and stuff. And so the basic conclusion that they found was that the ketogenic diet reduced exercise performance in activities that heavily depend on anaerobic energy systems. And so what that means is short-term burst efforts. Your body has two energy systems. You know, in a nutshell, you've got your aerobic energy system, which burns mainly fat for fuel, and then you've got your anaerobic energy system, which burns, you know, like creatine, and, you know, there's a couple different pathways there, but one of the major things that it uses is carbohydrates. And so if you're limiting your carbohydrate intake, you're going to limit the fuel available to the anaerobic energy system, which for some athletes is good. I mean, but the thing is the ketogenic diet and these extremely low carbohydrate diets have become really popular for a couple of reasons. One, people use them for weight loss, and two, people use them for performance enhancement, because there have been some studies that have looked at the effect of ketogenic diets on endurance and found some positive results. And you also have a lot of anecdotal evidence coming from endurance athletes saying how the ketogenic diet and low carbohydrate diets have helped them. And so the difference is, though, is that the athletes and the people, the studies that are done in finding a positive impact of a ketogenic diet on endurance, these studies are generally being done on endurance athletes. And so there's a difference in endurance for anaerobic endurance versus aerobic endurance. These are two different things. So kind of going back to the first thing we were talking about, like high intensity interval training works on that, you know, the anaerobic endurance, and your just, you know, steady state cardio or you know, longer intervals that aren't quite as intense, because again, you can only go so hard for so long. You know, less intense intervals, they're working more on that aerobic energy system. And excuse me, so there's a difference there. And so what you have to do is understand, what kind of athlete are you? What kind of fuel source does your sport ask you or needs you to use? And the thing with mountain biking is there's a really wide range of athletes and people under the banner of the term mountain biking. I mean, you've got everybody from, you know, downhill racers who are like 3 to 5 minutes, which really that is a very anaerobic sport. Like they are basically a strength and power, anaerobic strength and power athlete, more than a traditional endurance athlete. And then you do have your more traditional endurance athletes. I mean, even a cross country racer, you know, their races are, you know, an hour and a half long. They're less than 2 hours, and there's a lot of interval type stuff going on. And so even then, there's a really high degree of anaerobic energy system being used. But you do have people who do, you know, longer rides. You've got your ultra endurance riders and stuff. And so, you know, people who do ride for 4, 5, 6, you know, 24 hours, you know, those kind of athletes, those riders are almost a different breed. They're like almost a different thing than a downhill racer. I mean, they're so different in the muscular and energy system demands. And again, just because they're riding a bike, and yes, there's a lot of things visually, and there are a lot of fundamental things that are the same, but when you're looking at it from an energy systems and muscular demand standpoint, like they may as well just be two completely different things. And so this is where a lot of confusion comes in with this stuff, because if you're using these low carbohydrate diets, one, to lose weight, great. Like they're a great way to help lose weight for some people. Again, there's a lot of individual stuff going on there, but in general, limiting carbohydrate intake will usually help with fat loss and weight loss. And so, but that's one thing. If you're using it as a mountain biker and you're trying to increase your performance, then you need to take a look at what are you doing on your bike. And so again, if you're a downhill racer, you don't have any business using a low carbohydrate diet in an attempt to improve your performance. Like the studies that looked at these diets and the athletes they helped, these had nothing to do with you. You're basically a sprinter. They're looking at marathon runners and you're a sprinter, and it's not the same thing. And so again, that's what this study is finding, is that these low carbohydrate diets they can have a negative effect on anaerobic energy system creation and endurance. And if you're relying heavily on that, which you are as a downhill racer, then you do not want to be doing things that impair this. And so, you know, and you basically just start working your way up the chain. So even like an enduro racer, you would want to balance this, right? Because again, everybody thinks about the big picture, like, oh man, we've got these long days and there's 2 days that we're riding, and there's, you know, it's this big endurance event. Yeah, but what do you get judged on? You know, I've talked about this before. Like, you need to focus on what do you get scored on. You get scored on those stages. You get scored on the you know, typically five or so stages, and these stages are typically, you know, 5 minutes, give or take. Some get longer, some a lot are shorter than that. And they typically tend to be more of a downhill type trail and or section of trail that you're being timed on. And so if you have to perform your best during this short, high intensity effort, you need to keep that in mind. Like, you know, yes, you need to have a fuel, a body that can fuel these transfer stages, and you know, showing up to your stage being exhausted and not, you know, having, you know, not being ready for it is not good. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about, like, you know, if you're trying to use a low carbohydrate diet to improve your enduro performance, again, you may be holding yourself back on the parts that actually matter the most. And that you could go a little bit slower on the transfer stages and a little bit faster on the time stages with a different dietary approach. And so again, then a lot of this is, you know, if you're just an average trail rider. And so really what for us as mountain bikers, what this boils down to is a term that called metabolic flexibility. And it's the ability to use fats or carbohydrates for fuel. Again, I was talking about this earlier with the you know, people wanting just a simple "this is good" and "this is bad" answer, and you know, weight and pressure and things on the hands, and how it's a nuanced conversation, but it gets a little difficult when people just want a real simple "do this, don't do this" answer. And it's the same thing here. You know, you're not wanting to say that, you know, carbs are evil and we don't want carbs, or that, you know, carbs are great and they're fueling, we, you know, and that's what we're going to fuel everything off of. Because I run into this too, like people who just, they can't get through a simple 2-hour ride without shoveling like a bunch of goos and bars into their face. Like, they're actually, you know, they could probably use a little work on their fat burning metabolism. Like, they're too sugar dependent. Like, you should be able to go for a 2-hour ride, you know, and not have to rely on goos and external energy sources for you to make it through it. And if you're not, that's a sign, again, of a lack of metabolic flexibility. Your body can't draw on fats when it needs to, and then draw on carbohydrates when it needs to. And so it's not getting fanatical about your approach. And so again, if you're using a really low carb approach, you're probably going to find that your high intensity efforts are going to start suffering some on the trail. And so again, it's balancing the two. And so for me, I recommend a mix. Again, like, I think carbohydrate, you know, sugar and carbohydrates get demonized. But they're not necessarily, like a lot of things, it's not them that are bad. It's how they're used and abused by people that become a problem. And so, you know, I'm a fan of like the zone type, like the 30-30-40 approach, you know, 30% protein, 30% fat, 40% carbs. I think that's a good starting point for a lot of mountain bikers, because it's a good mix of the three. And again, there's a lot of individuality that goes into nutrition. Like, from there, you may have to do some self-experimentation, and you may find that you do well on a little lower carbohydrates or a little more carbs and a little less fat than someone else. And so that's where you can't get too dogmatic about these things. But in general, you can safely say that a extremely low carbohydrate diet will affect your performance in high intensity anaerobic based activities. And since the trail requires a lot of that from us, then, you know, that means that we need to keep that in mind. So it's funny, ironically enough, one of my very, 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 very first fitness articles that I wrote for T Nation way back in the day was called? It was called Fuel for Thought. And it was basically talking about the same thing, but in a weird way. It was the zone diet was the big thing. Everybody, you know, the zone diet was the low carb approach. And, you know, again, in the late 80s, early 90s, fat was the bad guy. And if you wanted to lose fat, you had to cut fat out. And so, you know, people were eating a lot of carbs. And then the zone diet came along and they're saying like, no, you need to eat more fat. And again, it's funny, like looking at it today, the zone diet's pretty moderate, but you had the zone diet and then you had the Atkins diet, which is basically a ketogenic diet. And that was the more extreme version, but both of them were talking about low carb. And I remember thinking, you know, I was into weightlifting and I had a buddy who was into Olympic weightlifting and I would train with him. I'd never use that term for what I was doing, but I would do some Olympic weightlifting and he was training. And so we would, you know, talk about his training. And I remember one day talking to him and being like, cause he was eating one of those zone bars. And I was just basically like, man, I just, you know, you're an anaerobic athlete. You know, your sport literally takes, you know, seconds. I mean, you are just running on phosphocreatines. I mean, you're barely even getting into your glucose. You know, it's over so quickly. So why, you're not even using fat for the most part. Like, why do you need a body that it optimally burns fat for fuel if as an athlete, you want to preferentially burn sugar and phosphocreatines for fuel? Like, wouldn't you want to eat in a way that primes your body to do that? And so, as we were talking about, I realized, hey man, there's something there. And so I wrote an article and it was basically, you know, saying like, hey, you know, if you're a weightlifter, if you're a sprinter, if you're an athlete that requires your anaerobic energy system, you need to, you know, do you really need a metabolism that preferentially burns fat for fuel? And so it's just kind of funny that one of my first fitness articles that I wrote way back in the late 90s was basically about the same thing. And just you have to look at as an athlete, how does your body create fuel? And then training yourself and eating in a way that helps optimize the way that your body does that. And so that's not going to be the same for all athletes. It's not going to be the same for all people. But anyways, I think the point is, well, I think you guys get the point at this point, which is take a look at what you're doing and then adjust your diet accordingly. But yeah, you cut out the carbs, you're going to suffer with those high intensity efforts for sure. So that does it. So those are the two studies that I wanted to talk about and share with you guys. And again, you can go to bikejames.com and find the blog post for this podcast, and I'll have the studies linked to there so you can take a look at them yourself and see if I was just making all this stuff up or if it was actually a good conclusion or not. But hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. While you're at bikejames.com, remember you can sign up for my free 30-day MTB Skills and Fitness program. I got a whole bunch of free workouts and stuff that you can sign up for while you're there, things to help you improve your riding through smart strength and conditioning, and also tying those things into your skills, because how you move off the bike is going to affect how you move on the bike. And so making that connection with your training program to help you move better both on and off the bike is really the key to unlocking your true potential and your sustainable performance. So I got a bunch of cool resources there that you can start taking advantage of that and starting on that path. So but anyways, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. Appreciate everybody tuning in, and I will talk to everybody next time.